I want to start this morning by asking you a question, and I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, okay? But how many of you have ever been accused or know about yourself that you might be a bit of a control freak? Don't admit it. I'm just asking you. It's travel season. So, for instance, do you leave 3 hours early for a domestic flight? Maybe you're scheduled to be somewhere and your GPS is telling you you'll get there at 6:02 and you feel like a failure. Or maybe when everyone else around you is packing for the one vacation you have planned, you're packing for the other two or three that might happen instead. Now, those around me know that I have some of these tendencies. Now, I from time to time will use ChatGPT, not to write sermons, don't worry, but to, you know, run some things by. How would you handle this? Give me some research on this. So it knows me fairly well. And I said, all right, chat, I'm writing a sermon about control freaks, and I know I have some of those tendencies, so give me some lines about myself that you think are true. And it came back pretty hard. Let me be honest with you. Here's some lines. I'm not kidding. I did not alter these. This is what chat said. If worrying burned calories, Josh would actually have abs. It said that. Next one. Some people hear God is in control and feel peace. Josh hears God is in control and immediately wonders if God is accepting suggestions. Next one. Josh doesn't catastrophize. He simply performs comprehensive risk assessments. Some of you are like, and what's the problem with that? And the last one. Some people trust God one day at a time. Josh trusts God after he's finished running every possible scenario through his head. Now, I would encourage you right now, don't look at my colleagues or family because you might get motion sickness from how quickly their heads are nodding in agreement. I think planning is kind of a moral virtue, right? And it's good to know every outcome. But the problem with that is that sometimes I believe that if I can just think through everything and anticipate every deviation, that I can prevent bad things from happening. The problem with that line of thinking when we're in Philippians is that Paul is writing from jail. So that isn't quite his MO, is it? Paul can't control much from where he is. He can't plan out his next three steps. He doesn't even know how much longer he'll be alive. So after his opening of thanksgiving and joy that we did last week, Paul has to clear something up with his readers. Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. He says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. You can understand why Paul would have to say this, right? Their spiritual leader, an area preacher and teacher, was imprisoned. So you might think that would stymie the spread of the gospel or even be a sign that God wasn't with Paul. But Paul is saying, nope. My imprisonment might have been intended to stop the gospel from spreading, but it's only served to hasten its spread. What's your evidence, Paul, for that? Sounds nice. Paul would say, well, look around. Verse 13. As a result, it's become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. So Paul is saying that his situation and his demeanor are a witness to the palace guards. And then other Christians see Paul in chains, and somehow they've become more confident in their faith, and they're proclaiming the gospel fearlessly. That is pure good news, right? Paul keeps going. Now, it is true, he says, that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing they can stir up trouble for me while I am in chains. So Paul acknowledges that some of this evangelistic testimony is problematic. So some are preaching out of love and goodwill, but others out of rivalry and selfish ambition. They're dunking on Paul because he's in prison and profiting off his misfortune. So Paul, what do you think about all that? Verse 18, what does it matter? What does it matter? All right, hang on, Paul. Full stop right here. What does it matter? Paul, it matters because you can't separate the motive from the messenger. It matters because people might be misled. It matters, Paul, because your reputation is at stake. What do you mean it doesn't matter? If that doesn't matter, what does? The important thing, Paul says, is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. There's Paul's answer. What matters is that Christ is preached. Good motives or bad, accurate information about Paul or not, Christ is preached. So there's one big whatever from Paul. Whatever their motive, Christ is preached, and I rejoiced. Now, if you think that whatever was interesting, check out the next one. Paul keeps going. I'll continue to rejoice because I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the two. All right, so Paul, given the option to live or die, your answer is whatever. Who sits there and makes a pro and con list like that? Equal items on each side of would prefer to remain alive. Let's just be honest for a minute. I'm not sure what to think about Paul's attitude here. What does he mean? It doesn't matter if someone is preaching Christ out of terrible motives. What does he mean? It doesn't matter if they're out there stirring up trouble. What does he mean? It doesn't matter if I live or die. So yes, it's a good thing that Christ is preached. But Paul, shouldn't you be out there combating all those bad motives and bad actors? Shouldn't you be begging God to spare your life? One way you could read Paul's whatever is resignation. You could read it in the Eeyore voice. Bad stuff is happening. I might die. I can't do anything. So I'll just sit here with my hands in my pockets and brood. That's one way to read the whatever. But I think there's another way. The other way is about priorities. And it's about a very practical conviction that some things matter more and others matter less, and my job is to spend my energy on the things that matter more and that I can control. The reason Paul can write what he writes is because he holds a couple of key convictions. I think the first one he knows is that his control is limited. Very practically, what's he supposed to do from where he is to make any difference in these false teachers or in what Caesar is going to do to him. You're going to start a letter-writing campaign? Call them out? Paul knew way before any modern writers knew that there is a limit to what we can do. Most of us have heard this in Reinhold Niebuhr's Serenity Prayer. You've heard this so many times. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, I know that can be trite, and I know there's some cliché-ness to it, but Paul seems to know the difference. I can't control these teachers or what happens to me. I can control how I respond in the meantime. One modern author, Steve Cuss, who wrote a book that kind of saved my ministry during COVID called Managing Leadership Anxiety. Can you imagine a more appropriate title? Steve Cuss has written about naming the areas of responsibility and control. He calls it the four spaces, but there's the space inside of me. There's the space between me and another person. There's the space completely in another person, and there's the space between a group of people. And if you want to use something different for space, think about relationship or conversation or any of those things. And Cuss invites us to ask this question: which of these spaces can I actually control? Well, the first one, and maybe my part of the second one. Can't control what another person is thinking or how they even view me, and I can't control what happens with another group of people that I'm not with. That's Paul's move. Paul refuses responsibility for the motives inside these rival preachers or the conflict among a group of rival preachers, and certainly he refuses responsibility for Caesar's verdict on his life. And instead he focuses on this: will Christ be exalted in my body? This line of thinking does not absolve us of responsibility. It's not, well, everyone for themselves, I'll worry about me. It's a prayerful relinquishing, and it's an acknowledgement that God is God, and surprisingly, I am not. And it's a radical responsibility for our own responses. Relinquishing doesn't remove fear either. Remember, we have Paul's writing in front of us. We don't have his tone. We don't know whether his hand was quivering with fear or whether he was full of anxiety when he wrote his whatevers. Don't mistake relinquishing control for a feeling of zen. I read the recent Christianity Today article about Dr. Peter Stafford, who contracted Ebola while serving in Congo. Some of you may remember the story over a decade ago of ACU's own Dr. Kent Brantley, who had a similar story. And the author who's profiling Dr. Stafford writes this about his experience. Despite a rooted faith and hope of heaven, Peter was afraid. He'd always thought of Christ's victory over death as a card to trump earthly peril, but when faced with a life-threatening situation, he was disheartened. And here's a quote from the doctor. I was scared, and I didn't handle it necessarily as well as I would have hoped. Well, Dr. Stafford, welcome to the I didn't handle it as well as I wished club. Some of us think that giving up control means just a blissful feeling of never feeling afraid. I hand it over, and I don't worry about it again. Paul doesn't say that. Dr. Stafford doesn't say that. Jesus in Gethsemane certainly doesn't say that. So what do these people say? I think that leads us to the other core conviction that Paul holds, which is that God's purposes can, in fact, be trusted. This conviction runs throughout Scripture. Joseph's brother intended slavery. God intended preservation. Pharaoh intended oppression. God raised up Moses. Haman built gallows. God sent Esther. The Sanhedrin and other leaders crucified Jesus. God raised him from the dead. And Rome imprisoned Paul. But the gospel spread through Caesar's household. Again and again, we see one thing. People intend something, but God intends something different or larger. And that doesn't mean everything that happens is good. Joseph doesn't say slavery is good. Paul doesn't say prison is good. It just means that God's purposes are not hostage to human actions. Some of you have watched big plans unravel. Careers, marriages, diagnoses, jobs, parenting. None of that catches God scrambling. We see this every day. Parents can't control the choices of their adult kids. Teachers can't control whether their students listen. Employers can't control whether their employees stay. Preachers can't control if or how sermons are received. Doctors can't fully control whether patients comply with treatment. Christians can't control whether people believe the gospel. So responsibility? Sure. Control? No. That's why Paul can say, what does it matter? Not because motives don't matter, not because prison doesn't hurt, not because lies don't wound. It's that Paul's become convinced that none of those things can ultimately derail what God is doing. So humans are powerful. They're not that powerful. They can wound God's servants. They can't thwart God's purposes. And if that's true, then maybe I don't have to feel the crushing burden of making everything turn out just right. Maybe I don't have to panic every time my plans unravel. Maybe my job isn't to guarantee the outcome. Maybe my job is to be faithful while God remains God. It is scary to give up control. It's scary to acknowledge the places we've never really had it. But this is Paul's example to us. I can't control prison. I can't control rival preachers. I can't control Caesar. I can't even control whether I live or die. And some of you know exactly what that feels like. You can't control whether your spouse changes or your child comes home. You can't control what the biopsy says or whether your company survives another round of layoffs. You can't control whether someone forgives you. But Paul says there is one beautiful freedom that no prison can take away. Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. That whatever is not some shrug of apathy or being resigned to whatever happens, happens. It's a firm belief that this thing in front of me that I can't control may happen. And my job is to choose how I respond. So last week, we affirmed that God is at work in us. That's the truest thing about any person, is that God is at work. And God is at work in circumstances you can see coming and in circumstances that you can't. And your job is not to be in control of everything or feel like the world rests on your shoulders. Your job, the thing you can control, is what Paul says. Live in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Let's be standing.